For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Cultivating inner strengths. To face all the challenges, and especially to face our vulnerabilities, we need inner strength. We need to grow that inner strength. And the way I found best is to cultivate a number of different things. Cultivate calm and stability. That's what we'll be talking about today. Practicing kindness, practicing self-compassion, practicing generosity. And when we do those things, we may have enough courage to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. Not in a doormat kind of way, but in a very wise way that we can become vulnerable. So we'll be exploring these practices over the next few sessions. Rick Hansen, who's a neuroscientist and a Buddhist and a mindfulness teacher, says, inner strengths are the supplies you've got in your pack as you make your way down the twisting and often hard road of life. On average, about a third of a person's strengths are innate, built into his or her genetically based temperament, talent, moods, and personality. The other two-thirds are developed over time. You get them by growing them. All of us know someone who just feels really calm and collected and things just don't get to them. And we think, well, they're so lucky they were born that way. I can never do that. That's not true. Because one-third of your temperament is innate. The other two-thirds are developed. It's a skill. And so we can all develop the skill of being more calm and more stable and more grounded and more focused. Because we need that if we're going to face our challenges that life's going to throw at us. And life's always going to be throwing us challenges. And I think the older we get, the more challenges that come up. And we need to face our vulnerabilities, because if we don't, we still have something poking at us and jerking us around. And so we get triggered really easily. So we want to be able to sit and face our vulnerabilities. You know, today is the anniversary of my dad's death. I think it's number 11. And I could have just gotten myself really busy this morning and just ignored it and pretended it didn't happen, because I used to be really good at that. But instead, I put on Moon River, his favorite song, and I just felt the sadness and the grief and just sat with it. I couldn't have done that 10 years ago or even 8 years ago, because I didn't have the inner strength to be with difficult emotions. So we've talked about neuroplasticity, how your brain is shaped by where you focus and rest your mind. And if you give into your brain's negativity bias, you allow your brain to focus on self-criticism, worrying, slights, and stress. And many of us spend 90% of our day on self-criticism, some of which is below the line. We don't even know we're criticizing ourselves. Worrying. I heard a lot of anxiety mentions in our check-in. And slights. You know, someone didn't say hi to me. Someone was, you know, ignored me. Someone didn't do something they said they were going to do. We spend a lot of time focused in on them. But we don't spend as much time training our brain to rest on the good. Because if we rest on the good things in life, we can shape our brain for a positive mood and for a positive sense of self-worth. Not self-esteem, because we have to do something to earn self-esteem, but self-worth. We're all worthy just because we are human. Think about it. Do you think a newborn baby is worthy? they haven't done anything to deserve being worthy. Matter of fact, all they do is poop and pee and spit up and sleep and cry, and they're still worthy. Definitely worthy. So each and every one of us is worthy. But we've been telling ourselves for years that we're not. So it's something we have to develop. So if we want to develop a better sense of self-worth and a more positive mood, we really have to focus in on training our brain to look for the good things. As you build your inner strengths, Brené Brown says to ask yourself these questions. So let's get into our meditative posture and take time to reflect on these questions. Are my choices comforting and nourishing my spirit? Or are they temporary reprieves from vulnerability and difficult emotions, ultimately diminishing my spirit? Are my choices comforting and nourishing my spirit? Or are they temporary reprieves from vulnerability and difficult emotions, ultimately diminishing my spirit? Are my choices leading to my wholeheartedness, or do they leave me feeling empty and searching? Are my choices leading to my wholeheartedness, or do they leave me feeling empty and searching? So the choices I had this morning could have been to get real busy, do all sorts of things, and just ignore the feelings that come up on the anniversary of a death. Or I could have taken a temporary reprieve and given myself maybe a chai latte and some chocolate or something to comfort myself. But that would have just been a temporary reprieve. It wouldn't have taken care of the feelings that I had. The other option I had was when I sat down to meditate, and that was a choice, to say, yes, I feel the sadness, and I'm just going to let it be there. And afterwards thinking, you know what, I just want to think about my dad and putting on his favorite song. And that left me feeling so much better than in other years where I just tried to ignore it and pretend like it wasn't happening and ended up being really cranky and everything triggered me. So we have to think about what our choices are doing to us. Are they leading us to be the person we want to be, or are they taking us farther away? Sometimes it feels really good when someone says something snippy to us to come back with that perfect comeback. and we feel really good. We've got a reprieve in that moment that, aha, I got you back. But overall, it really diminishes us. It doesn't really make us feel good in the long run. It doesn't help the relationship. And so we really have to look at what our choices are. But to look at the choices takes a lot of courage and a lot of inner strength. And so to make better choices and nourish your spirit so you can feel more wholehearted, you need to cultivate the inner strength. So you're probably thinking, okay, how do I do that? Where do I start? What strengths do I nurture? There's so many different strengths you could work on. So based on my experience, I recommend that you start by training your brain to be calm and stable. And it doesn't matter if you train your brain to be calm and stable with meditation, or with taking a walk, or being outside in nature. You know what's going to work for you. What works for me might not make you calm and stable. But choose some things to help yourself get calm. You know, maybe it's a picture of a loved one or some grandkids that you look at and just savor it. Maybe it's getting outside, looking at the blue sky and the puffy clouds, feeling the warmer air on your skin. So figuring out, when I start getting worked up, what do I need to do to calm myself? And then after you've calmed yourself, then you can start working on inner strengths like kindness or self-compassion or generosity or gratitude. But you need some wins to kind of build your confidence and your motivation. So it's really difficult to see clearly if your body and your mind are not calm and stable, if they're all mixed up, which mine were totally when I was worrying about my cousin and what could I do, and I was ruminating again and again, and I know I was ruminating because I wasn't coming up with anything new. I was just saying the same thing over and over, and it was working me up, and it's hard to see. And then when I went for the walk in nature and calmed my body, I saw, yeah, there's nothing I can do. I can be there for her if she wants to talk, but I can't change her. And she's just going to do what she's going to do. And that was my still lake. It reflected reality perfectly. This is all I can do, and I have to accept it. Because I couldn't see reality when my lake was all churned up by the wind and I was going round and round and round. I was on my hamster wheel going around and round. So to cultivate calm and stability, we need to figure out how we can calm our mental chatter. If we can slow down our mental chatter, we can calm our bodies and we can calm our minds. For me, meditation is what works. If I sit down to meditate, I will feel much calmer afterwards. But the problem is, when I'm churned up, I don't want to sit down and meditate. It's like, oh, that seems too hard. But I know that it works because I've tried it over and over. So what I've been doing, and the reason it's so important to meditate when things are going along okay, because sometimes we think, oh, I don't need to meditate, life's good. Then we're not training our brain to become calm again. And what we don't use, we lose, right? You think, well, I've meditated, I learned how to bring myself back, so I don't need to practice it anymore. That's not true. You need to practice it forever, just like if I said, well, I can quit working out with weights now because I got up to 10 pounds, and that's good. But if I go for a week or two, I'm going to be back down to 5 pounds, 8 pounds maybe, and I'm going to lose it. So I need to keep practicing whatever practice I do, whether it's a body scan or walking or meditating, to bring the focus of my attention back to myself, to the present moment, whether it's back to the breath or back to what I'm seeing in nature. And that focus helps us to be calm and stable. It doesn't do any good to walk in the woods and ruminate. You're no calmer than you were when you started. But if you walk in the woods and see that, and I think today every single tree that you see will have a bud on it, even if you really have to look to see it, that will help you to calm down. So I'm finding it's easier and easier to calm myself when I get triggered, but I need to keep building those neural pathways so they become more automatic, because they're not necessarily automatic. And Matt Licata and Jeff Foster said, remember, difficult feelings and thoughts are like quicksand. The more you struggle against them, the more they suck you in. That's why we need to learn how to let the feelings be, but cultivate our calm and our stability. You know, if you're holding a crying baby and you're all stressed out, is that baby going to stop crying? No. But if you can calm yourself, and I think that's why we so often sing to babies when they're upset, because when we sing, we calm our bodies and then we calm them. So it's easier to calm ourselves if we're telling ourselves, I just need to calm down for this breath and for this one. When I went through my teacher training, there were a lot of very difficult emotions that I needed to sit with that I had never sat with before. And it was overwhelming for me. And one of my friends said, well, you don't have to sit with it forever. Just see if you can sit with it for one breath, or maybe two breaths, and then let it go again. And that's all you have to do. And eventually you'll be able to sit longer and longer periods of time. But don't think I have to sit with this till I solve it, because you're going to just brush it right back under the carpet if you're thinking that way, because it's going to be too difficult, too hard. So when we think these difficulties are going to go on forever, we get overwhelmed and we get reactive. And those difficulties are only going on forever because we keep replaying the stories in our mind about that difficulty. And if we can't sit with the difficulty and let it go, we don't have to keep replaying those stories, and we can calm ourselves. And that's what the mindful pause is all about. We've talked about that. Just take three breaths when you feel you're getting triggered. Sometimes that's enough. Lots of times it isn't. You need another three breaths, or maybe you need to go out and do some walking meditation or whatever, but you know that you need to calm your body. But don't think that you're going to calm your body by starting out meditating 45 minutes a day, because that's not going to be sustainable. We all have to take persistent baby steps. If we go for the big, bold steps, we're going to think that's going to speed up the change. It's not, because we're going to get overwhelmed and we're not going to be able to sit 45 minutes. And then we'll have missed one day, and then the next day, well, I don't have the energy to do it. I'll do it tomorrow. And all of a sudden, we're not doing it at all. So, because when we bite off more than we can chew, we give up. So rather than saying you're going to meditate 45 minutes a day, say, I'm going to meditate 2 minutes a day. Or maybe it's only 1 minute a day. Or maybe it's, I'm going to take three mindful breaths every morning when I wake up and before I go to sleep at night. We have to start really small. You know, if you're starting a gratitude practice, it's not, I'm going to find 10 things a day to be grateful for, and I'm never, ever going to let them repeat. That's going to become way too hard. Maybe start with, I'm going to find one thing a day that I'm grateful for. I'm going to find three things a day. And the problem with baby steps is we feel like we're not doing so much, that we could be doing a lot more. But if you do the baby steps persistently over time, you will see results. You know, I started with a 2-pound weight. And that sounds kind of ridiculous, but I've screwed my shoulders up every time I try and do weights. So I started out really slow with baby steps. And if I can do that persistently, I moved up to 5 and up to 8, and now I'm up to 10. And that's probably as high as I'll go. But if I keep doing that over time, I'm going to see results. You know, a lot of times when we exercise, we think we have to go at 110%. And that's when we get injured and have to stop. One of the mindfulness teacher at my teacher training said, exercise at 70% of your capability. Because if you exercise at 70%, that 70% is going to continue growing. Yes, it's going to take longer, but you're going to not get injured. So think about that with your practicing mindfulness. Don't think, I'm going to be mindful 24/7, because nobody is. But if you think, I'm going to be mindful for a couple minutes in the morning, maybe a couple minutes in the afternoon, and whether that's just bringing yourself back to the present moment and enjoying it, or meditating, or a body scan, or walking meditation, doesn't matter what it is. Just do it on a consistent basis. And the reason we need baby steps is because they prevent brain freeze and overwhelm. When we think we have to do something that's really hard, we just freeze and we don't do anything and we get overwhelmed. So baby steps have a much greater chance of success, and thus reducing your fear of failure, because sometimes it's fear of failure that keeps us. I don't know if I can do this meditation practice, so I'm just not gonna. Because if I don't do it, I don't try, then I haven't really failed. Taking baby steps triggers your innate reward system, and that's what motivates you to keep going. It's our occipital cortex that's the reward center of our brain. And we constantly have to be updating the information that's in there, so that if we're getting rewarded for something, we're going to keep doing it. Sometimes we're not really getting rewarded, but we think we are, because we used to get rewarded for that behavior. Or we've told ourselves we'd get rewarded for that behavior. So anytime we can feel good about what we're doing, we're making that behavior stronger. So one of the baby steps that I took, and I probably have talked about this a million times here, but it's savoring the good. Our brains have a built-in negativity bias. We have to train them to focus on what is working, what is joyful, what is good. And the check-ins I heard a lot of, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that. That's, and I'm not putting in, placing any judgment, I'm just saying that's how our brains work, is I'm not, I'm not, I'm not. Instead of I am doing this, I am doing that. And whatever I'm doing, it's enough. I don't have to worry about what I'm not doing. So we want to focus in on what's good, what's joyful. And the practice Rick Hansen introduced me to is called taking in the good. And this was back when I got a paper newspaper before COVID. Every day I'd go out to get the newspaper and I would find something to savor. Whether it's the blue sky, a cool cloud, the wind on my face, the beauty of the snow, buds on a tree, whatever it was, I would stop and look at it and enjoy it for 20 to 30 seconds. And then I just go on about my day. And 6 months later, I was driving to work the same route I had been driving for almost 10 years. And all of a sudden, I noticed these gorgeous trees that were never ever there before, that I never ever saw, because I was so busy with my mind looking at all I have to do and what I have to get done, that I wasn't seeing the good things. And now I see the good all over the place. And that was just 20 to 30 seconds a day for 6 months. That's baby steps. So when we get something that we like, we often don't take time to savor it. We get something and we want to move on. We've got to go on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And we don't even bother to savor getting the things we want. So you want to take the time to appreciate your successes and your joys. I was with my granddaughter and grandson this weekend, and my granddaughter is just turning 2 this month. And she saw me and she jumped up into my arms and she just wanted to be held. And I just keep remembering that, and it brings so much joy that she knew, you know, she knows Grandma. She doesn't see her that often because they're down in Chicago. But just the smile on her face and the happiness, and my grandson too, he came running up the stairs to give me a big hug. And I savor it. You know, I could focus on when he was getting cranky or when, you know, something went wrong. But I'm training myself to say, yeah, that happened, but let's focus on something good. We have to allow ourselves to experience awe. There's the coolest oak tree at Oak Hill Correctional Institution between the guardhouse and the school. And I experience awe almost every time I walk up there. And I'm always telling the guys about pay attention. And one time I had to say, you know what? I walked up here this morning and I didn't see the oak tree. But most of the time I do, and just savor it and enjoy it. Because when you pay attention to things, they go from being neutral to being really special. You know, many of us said, well, I don't even know if I saw the trees in the past, but now I see them and they're really special. So we have enough neutral stuff in our life, but if we pay attention to it, it can become sources of joy. So you want to pay attention to the people and the things you're grateful for. You want to be like a 2-year-old. A couple weekends ago, I was with my other grandson who's just turned 4, and it was the first spring day where he could get out and play with all the toys in the garage, and he was so excited. I could do this. I can do this. As if he never saw them before, never did them before. He just really enjoyed it. And that's how we want to train our brain to be. Because we need that joy inside of us to give us that inner strength. So let's just take a moment to think about what satisfied you in the past week. What really made you feel nourished? We all have things that really nourish us going on in our lives. And sometimes they're big things that we can really focus on. Sometimes it's just little things that we need to focus on. You know, just the fact that we have a non-stomachache. or a non-toothache. Have a toothache, and afterwards, you're going to be so grateful for that non-toothache. Jean's going to be so grateful for her non-hip ache in a couple of weeks. So there's always something we can be grateful for, but we can't look for the win the lottery kind of things. And if we think we have to have that to be grateful, then we're going to miss out on all the other things that really make us grateful. And by practicing gratitude, it again calms us and lets us know there are good things in life. And when we know there's good things in life, it's not like an either or, life is good or life is bad. Life is always a little bit of both. It's marbled. And so by knowing that, it gives us a little bit more courage to face our vulnerabilities. And so let's see what our time is. Let's take a moment to reflect on how we handle our vulnerabilities. So getting into our meditative posture. What do I automatically do when I feel emotionally exposed? Do I shut down? Do I lash out? Do I just jump into fix-it mode? What do I do when I feel emotionally exposed? Do I take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths? Do I hold those emotions like I'd hold a crying baby? How do I behave when I'm feeling very uncomfortable and uncertain? How do I behave when I'm feeling very uncomfortable and uncertain? Do I make up stories in my mind to be certain? Or stories to justify what I'm thinking or what I did? Do I seek out more information? Do I have a trusted friend I can talk to? Can I just sit with that feeling of being uncomfortable and uncertain? Just letting it be there? Or am I pushing it away? How willing am I to take emotional risks? And how wise am I about evaluating the emotional risk? We don't want to go to the point where we're always oversharing thinking that's taking emotional risks. Because that's not discerning, that's not wisdom. How do I evaluate emotional risks to see which are worth it and which are not? Or do I just shut them all down because I think I'll be safer that way? Edges of our experiences that we fear form a kind of invisible front fence that limits the life we allow ourselves to have. One of the questions we ask at prison is, what prison were you in before you came to prison? And how many of you are in prison in your mind? Because you don't allow yourself, you limit it to keep yourself safe. I know I was in a prison from seventh grade until I was about 60 years old, a prison of, if I let people get to know me, they won't like me. So my prison was keeping people at arm's distance. And that was a prison until I saw that it was there. Because I dreaded what would happen if they told me, no, you don't fit in with our group anymore, like I was told in seventh grade. I dreaded that experience, so I closed myself off from any experience with anyone for a long time. What we dread is usually rooted in our childhood. And what I found is that today it's much less likely to happen, it's much less painful, and it's not so overwhelming as I thought it was going to be. So we need to work to build our calmness and our stability so we can start by facing the small vulnerabilities. We don't want to start with the big ones. We want to be wise and build our skills slowly. Play a game that you're not good at. I hate playing games I'm not good at. But I'm going to play games I'm not good at. Call a friend you haven't been in touch with for a long time. Sometimes it feels kind of awkward to call someone you've lost touch with. Give someone a compliment. Sometimes we think, oh, that's a really pretty shirt. But we feel funny saying it, so we just swallow it rather than giving someone a compliment. As you build your confidence in your ability to handle vulnerability, then you can move on to the bigger things. Because we all got, I'm sure, bigger things that we need to deal with. So what we want to do is really use our mind to curate our world. You know, we all have this carefully curated exterior that we show other people, but a lot of times inside we're a mess. We're only a mess because we're not using our minds to clean up that mess. Our mind-made world was developed as we were growing up, and it consists of a lot of shoulds that are not really yours, and it includes a lot of perceptions that are not true, and it limits your thinking, your actions, and your life. So to curate your mind-made world, you got to start by seeing clearly. The stronger our wants and fears, the narrower our perception that we take in. So if we're triggered, we have on our flashlight or our tunnel vision, and all we can see is the problem. And we jump from fixing one problem to the next instead of listening to how the problem makes us feel. And so we want to work with our minds to help us develop the inner strengths, to see the beauty in the world, to experience the joy, so that we have the energy to deal with the more difficult things that life's gonna bring us. And so that's the start of cultivating our inner strengths. It's really the start of cultivating calmness and stability.